The Business on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by AIB. We see brave and we're backing it through Brexit.
Well, misogyny wasn't exactly a huge part of the American election campaign this time, but it's a problem that our next guest, Oxford University lecturer Linda Scott and author of The Double X Economy, says needs to be tackled urgently in workplaces and boardrooms everywhere. Her book has some startling statistics. One that I felt stood out was that 80% of the world's arable land is owned by men. We caught up with her earlier and I first asked her about a fascinating chapter in the book which deals with non-human societies. She makes the interesting comparison between the behaviour of bonobos and chimps. So I asked her, which are we, bonobos or chimps?
Yeah, that was really interesting. I felt like I had to look at the question of whether this was natural because of the universality of the pattern. So, and if you have a universal pattern like that, you have to ask yourself, how long has this been happening? Where does this originate? And that means that either the history is quite long or it has some natural basis. And in the sense of natural, it's often argued by people who want to be apologists for male dominance that it's, you know, that all animals are like this and that it's better for their survival and so forth. Well, it turns out that the two primates that are closest to us, which are identical in the genetics that they share with us and virtually identical with those that they share with each other, are radically different on this domain. Chimpanzees are male dominant, they're patriarchal, they're warlike, they have a rape culture. Whereas on the other hand, bonobos are female dominant, they don't allow rape, they don't fight with other troops, and they just have a more relaxed, more playful culture. And since we don't know what common ancestor we have with them, we can't really say which is our natural condition.
So you're saying that in the bonobo community, females have a much greater role and there is less confrontation, less violence. How do they achieve that?
Okay, so it's an interesting thing. Bonobos they use sex as a way to diffuse tension and resolve conflict. And so that's what they do. They play and they have sex. Those are the two ways that they just diffuse tension that way. And bonobos are very, let's say, liberal about their sexual standards.
A bit of free love then, Linda, is it?
The totally free love. And it seems like every single article I read about bonobos at one point or another said they're basically make love, not war. And that pretty much says it all about bonobos.
So what you're saying is that we have something to learn from bonobos' free love or whatever social structures and gender structures that are there. We should be looking more to the bonobo structure. We'd have a better world if that was the case. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, pretty much, I think. And this is not to say that we would be better off with a female dominant culture, because I think it's the phenomenon of dominance itself, whether it's coming from males or females, that is the problem. It's the dominance aspect. But I do think that the whole overall culture of sharing, they share food and things like that much more. They share childcare. And they're just happier, seem to be happier and more peaceful. And I think it's fair to say that in primatology, they tend to feel that way as well, that we'd do better to learn something from bonobos.
But it is also true that human beings are competitive. And when you get into the corporate world, you know, very much of what happens in the corporate world is about competition in capitalism. And it's not just necessarily about gender. It's just about one company trying to beat another company. And is there not something inevitably in the recipe of the competition that leads to these other things that you can say this is a bad outcome? But competition is inevitable, isn't it?
I think that there is a certain amount of competition that is desirable, and it has, but the distinction we have to learn to make is between a healthier and positive competition and a more brutal sort of might is right competition. And human history really has been more about might is right. And unfortunately, today, our economic philosophy is that way as well. It's important to understand that men have a competitiveness among each other that is distinctively different. It's about it's more about status than it, than really achievement. It's a different kind of competition. It's not positive.
So are you saying then that competition among businesses, among business people, Wall Street bankers, whatever it is actually just as much about status as it is about results? And it's a slightly more civilized version of what ends up being violence in other societies or in other circumstances.
Yeah, and in history. However, I would have to say that I would make a distinction, for example, between Wall Street bankers and other kinds of businesses. And that would have a lot to do with the exclusionary attitude that they have toward women, which makes them have this more male-dominant negative way of being. Now, I also have to say that it's extremely important to say that even though the Western nations still have a gender equality problem and that it is severe enough to merit attention and destructive enough to merit attention, there has also been a massive sea change in men's attitudes toward gender equality in those countries over the last 50 years. And so many men, if not most men, not only favor gender equality, they are less like this other form of negative competition, which just goes to show us that it is possible to change. Human nature is very malleable in this regard.
Now, in the book, you paint a picture of, and it's very much looking at a broad brush globally. You're not just looking at, you know, a particular territory, a particular developed country or developing country. But when you look at the issues and the challenges, how do you fix these things?
Well, I think that one of the things, again, that I really want to emphasize in the book is that there's a whole community of people internationally that have been working on this that I've been part of. And what we have found is that there are interventions, if you will, that you can do that make a difference. One of the big ones is creating access to capital, for example, so that women and earning power and bank accounts, we find that the economic enablement of the women also enables them in the rest of their lives to have more respect, command more respect, to be able to stand up to someone who's bullying them, even to claim the legal rights that they have. So this is something, these economic interventions are really, really important. I think another thing that we need to do is to look more closely at the male behavior that perpetuates this system. And I think this is particularly important in the Western countries, because you have to ask the question, if 75 to 80% of the men in those countries support gender equality, what is up with the rest of them?
What about the idea, though, that I often hear talking to female entrepreneurs that they'll sometimes criticize other women a bit for saying that one of our big difficulties is we lack confidence. Men who know half what they know will have double the confidence. Or sometimes in business, they reach a point in the business and they don't have the same ambition to grow the company and go on that a male might have. Is there an element of female psychology in it as well?
I think in some instances that is true, but what I think when we work through it a bit more, because there is research on this, is because some of the projects I've been involved with, for example, involve women's access to financial services. And what we find is that even though we build their confidence and make them, you know, credit ready, if you will, what we see is inevitably that the bankers are pushing back. And so the women are less, we might say, less confident, but in fact, what it is that they have a very realistic expectation that they're not going to be treated well by the bankers and that they're probably not going to get the capital that they need. And so in my experience, the confidence is sort of anticipatory. It's expecting to be shut down. A lot of the time, too, it's also self-defense. It's knowing or sensing that if they push things, there's going to be retaliation, there's going to be anger. And so they sort of self-censor. And so I think that sometimes what we chalk up to lack of confidence or holding themselves back has to do with facing different barriers than men do and facing this potential for retaliation in a way that men don't.
You're being pretty tough on the bankers there, Linda. They've cropped up a couple of times. Do you think then, are you saying that they're operating I don't know, unfair stereotypes that they're not giving women a fair crack at it in relation to supporting them financially, you know, giving them loans, having belief and confidence in them?
I think it's quite clear that they're not. Globally, it's a big problem, and it's recognized within, again, this international community that includes institutions like the World Bank and the major development banks. So
finance and tech needs to have a look at the bonobos, and they might learn a thing or two.
Yeah, and they need to look in the mirror. They need to start taking a sharp look at their own behavior and be more self-aware instead of excusing it with silly ideas like male dominance is natural, which is totally bogus.
Linda Scott there.